Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. As you know, here on AOI, we like to start the week off with some good vibes, something to get your day started on a good note. And today, we're literally talking about notes. We're celebrating dance music, not just because it makes you feel good, but because science has determined it might just be good for your brain. That's Break My Soul from Beyoncé, whose house music-inspired surprise single from earlier this year has been one of the summer's anthems. In addition to Beyoncé, the rapper Drake's dropped a dance album, and even Lizzo's most recent disco-inspired single dares you to get on the dance floor.
In a minute, I'ma need a sentimental man or woman to pump me up. Feeling fussy, walking in my Balenciennes, trying to bring out the fabulous. Cause I give a bump, way too much. I'ma need like two shots in my cup. Wanna get up, wanna get down. That's how I feel right now.
A study from the Japanese university Tsukuba found that music with a groove not only feels good and makes you want to dance, it's also good for your brain function. Groove is loosely defined as the sense of propulsive rhythmic feel or sense of swing created by the changing patterns played by a band's rhythm section, drums, electric bass, or double bass guitar, or keyboards. In other words, it's both the repetition of the beat and the way the rhythm works in tandem and how it makes you feel. Combined with the subjective, inexplicable thing that makes you want to move, groove is a main component in genres such as soul, funk, salsa, fusion, rock. Researchers in Tsukuba found that groove music enhanced cognitive function among participants who were familiar with groove music, especially in regards to executive function. Executive function is defined as the skills needed to enable us to plan, focus, attention, remember instructions, and multitask. So basically, those music fans felt sharper and more clear-headed after listening and getting in the groove. While the researchers said more research was needed to determine how to apply this information, the study was hopeful in terms of potential ways to enhance executive function. Today's good vibes, courtesy of vibes and groove music, which means we get to play Madonna in this classic. Today's good vibes.
You know, a lot of summer's top hits call back to a certain era of dance music, creating a sense of nostalgia for when disco, funk, and house dominated the nightclub scene. Born in the early 80s in The Warehouse, an intimate black gay club in Chicago, house music began as a response to the death of disco. The connection is very clear on Beyoncé's album Renaissance, which is dedicated to her late Uncle Johnny, who she called, quote, the most fabulous gay man she'd ever known at the 30th Annual GLAAD Awards. Let's take a listen to that clip.
He was brave and unapologetic during a time when this country wasn't as accepting. And witnessing his battle with HIV was one of the most painful experiences I've ever lived. I'm hopeful that his struggle served to open pathways for other young people to live more freely.
Also this summer, Drake's album Honestly, Nevermind fuses deep house, Afrobeats, and Baltimore club music. Let's take a listen to the lead single from the album. This is Massive.
All these feelings intertwined, oh, fighting the urge to reach out. And my stance remains unchanged, baby. I can't help it, I'm so into you.
The The sudden reemergence of house music in the mainstream has ignited conversation about the genre's origins and history. Joining us here to talk about the foundations and its milestones is writer, photographer, and music critic Craig Seymour. Craig, thanks for making time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. That's so great.
So let's talk about the 80s. You were there. I was there. talked about it was a time of space exploration, MTV, AIDS epidemic. How would you describe the time and conditions that house music was born in?
Well, you know, I think what we're saying is that dance music really comes back into the mainstream in times when there's sort of a disconnect between gay visibility and conservative politics. Because if you go back into the 70s, disco emerged during the Nixon era and also during the rise of the religious right. If you look at house music in the 80s, you're talking about that as being a response to Reaganomics and a response to the AIDS crisis, and also just a response to the lack of social services and all sorts of overt homophobia. And now we come to, I guess, the Renaissance era. And, you know, at this, we have Legendary on TV and Pose and all of this gay visibility, but we also have anti-gay measures in Florida and the Supreme Court opening the path for there to be an overturning of gay marriage and sodomy laws and all sorts of things. So I really think it's very, very interesting how those patterns have continued to kind of recreate themselves.
What was the culture during the early house music days in the warehouse and the nightclub scene? Who was there? Which dances were considered house dances? What was the dress code like?
Well, unfortunately, I was like a New York club person. Mm-hmm. So I was never at the actual warehouse, you know, when everything was going down, but we would hear stories and it was almost like with hip hop, there was a whole new lingo introduced into dance culture. It was all about jack your body and everything like that. And first we were like, what is this? And then it just took over the New York nightclub sound, which had been kind of dominated by sort of electro freestyle sounds. And it was almost like somebody clicked the light. And then all of a sudden, house music was everywhere. And then when Steve Soak Hurley did House Music Anthem with those pianos, that really connected it with the tradition of gospel-based club music that was coming. That's always been a big part of club music in New Jersey. So in the 80s, it all very quickly came together into this one huge thing that transcended that built upon the very early minimalist house tracks that were coming out of Chicago that were made in people's bedrooms, you know. And then we get into the 90s where we start having like big pop hits like Cece Peniston's Finally and Robin S.'s Show Me Love.
Frankie Knuckles was often called the godfather of house music. I'm going to play
He should be.
Tell people about Frankie Knuckles before we play the track, the Whisper Song.
I will say that just because there have been a few questions about that, but Frankie Knuckles is the one who, he's a New Yorker. So he started with Larry Levan, who was the legendary DJ at Paradise Garage. So basically he brought all of these post-disco South Soul records that were made in Philly to Chicago and really introduced people to those sounds. But of course, since most of those records were made in the late 80s, in the late 70s, at a certain point, he was running out of new material. So that's when the kids that would be coming to the warehouse would take all of their instruments in the same way that hip-hop producers used whatever they could get their hands on and started making tracks in an attempt to emulate those early South Soul records. But of course, they couldn't because those were made with huge orchestras and everything like that. So that's where we started getting the minimalist house sound. But also when you talk, so he was one of the first to put on Jamie Principle's Your Love, which is considered one of the first house records. He also helped with Jamie Principle's Bad Boy, where he says, some people call me a queer, some people call me a freak, which is one of the first house records to really explicitly talk about the gay community. And then toward the end of... in 1988, Frankie actually left Chicago, which was an interesting time because there's one in this book by Micah Sylund, Do You Remember House? Falkland, rather, he talks about at one point they estimated that four out of five of the original Warehouse members had died of AIDS at that point, even in 1988. So Frankie left Chicago and went to New York and began in production. So that's where we start getting all those glorious house remixes, which really transformed the culture because people were like, oh, this is a song I know, but this sounds totally different. You know what I mean? So he is absolutely the godfather of house because of the way that he walked house music through all of its many transitions. Sorry to go long, but it's personal.
We love long. We love history. This is Craig Seymour is my guest. How popular music got into house is the subject. We'll have more with Craig after a quick break, but we do need to listen to the Whisper song before break. Take a listen. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Craig Seymour. We are talking about how popular music got into house music, the history of house. So, Craig, I want to clear something up that you addressed on Twitter about house music, which is sometimes referred to as unce music. And I think there's this clip from, we'll get to it. This is their clip from a really popular sitcom, Two and a Half Men. And this is, explain it.
Play house, go where we could build a house, or we could listen to house music.
All right, this is a bad laugh track as well. What is this? Why is unce possibly a microaggression?
Well, because it reflects so many ways that Black music has been sort of misconstructed in the past. I mean, just the very sort of like almost animalistic sound of the really goes back to the very early musicological writings on African music, which compared the music to the music of gorillas. You know, I hear all of that when I hear and then it just becomes a way to reduce the musical complexity of the music to just the beat. You know, I mean, there's so much going on in house music. I mean, there are people that, you know, beautiful lyrics, beautiful piano lines, the wonderful church school vocalists that like Martha Wash, who add all sorts of emotional dimensions to the music. And then all we can do is describe it as oomph oomph. So I think it's just another way to reduce dance music and another way to reduce Black music. And the other thing that concerns me, especially in this time of political conservatism, is that dehumanization, Brené Brown actually writes this, always starts with language. And when we look back at times that have been very conservative in the past and have led to unspeakable horrors, we always see the culture of a people being attacked and being ridiculed before we actually see the people physically being abused and dehumanized. So I start thinking about the ways that Jewish music was talked about during the early days of Nazi Germany, how Black music was talked about in the days of Nazi Germany, and people were warned against it. I start thinking about the way that rock and roll was spoken about in the days of Jim Crow, and people, you know, as degenerate music and everything like that. So anything where I feel that Black music is being reduced to less than what it is, it's another attempt to undermine Black cultural achievement, and it's another step toward dehumanizing Black people because we are our culture.
How has house music continued to influence mainstream music, Craig, and the discourse about pop music over the last decade?
I mean, house music really has just become pop music in terms, especially if you think of terms of production and in terms of the use of the electronic instruments and everything like that. All of the things that were really innovated by early house and other dance music producers is just a part of mainstream production. And then, of course, sometime in the 2000s, we had that whole EDM movement where it was largely U.S. pop stars working with producers from Europe to create a kind of pop house sound. But in that moment, what we were getting was a sort of dance music that was rooted in pop. So it didn't quite feel as rich to some of us who were used to older house music, because older house music is rooted in soul and is rooted in gospel. And it's one of the wonderful things that I think about Beyoncé's new album is that she returns house music to its roots in soul and its roots in gospel with songs like Church Girl. So not every song on the Beyoncé album is a house song, but every song on the Beyoncé album is in the spirit of what inspired house and what makes house so important to such a large community.
Writer and photographer and journalist Craig Seymour has been walking us through the history of house. Craig, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's go out on Robin. Show me love. You mentioned it. Let's show some love. I hope you danced. You heard us. It's good for you. It's good for your health. It's good for your brain. There's more all of it to come. We'll discuss the joys of writing with a good pen and hear about some of the best in summer streaming. We'll get to all of it after the news.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.